This week on Two Bears, One Cave.
I start doing the math and you go, God damn it, I should have sold drugs when I was younger. I think I'd be so much more successful. One of those kids has got your DNA and is going to make up millions of dollars.
I hope so, because I've been watching them. Is it not all of them? I'm telling you that
now. I fucking love bacon so much. If cock tasted like bacon, I would have bruised knees. 100%. Cheers.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey guys, brand new episode of Two Bears, One Cave, and I apologize to all the horrible things Tom Segura has written about Europe on his Instagram. Tom hates fucking Europe. Can you believe that? Do you know who Tom Segura is?
Oh, no. No, you know, you're going to have to inform me on a lot of...
Don't know who Tom is? He's this fat. How many... Sitting with me as a guest bear today.
Yeah.
Country Wayne. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know, now you know. Fucking... When you want to talk about game changers in the game of comedy,
mm-hmm.
you put the hustle into comedy. Can I tell you, you're friends with D. Ray Davis, right?
Yeah, D. Ray Davis. Yeah,
D. Ray Davis. D. Ray Davis is he is the quintessential hustler in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That guy, I don't know what stories he's told me that are secrets and mm-hmm. what stories that he told me that are public, but he, to put some backstory, he was doing Monday night shows in Chicago and walking out with 30 grand in cash in a Gucci backpack.
Yeah. Yeah, he a hustler, man. He still put together his own shows where he'll bring comedians and be the promoter. So, yeah, D-Ray definitely a hustler.
D-Ray is a hardcore hustler. And I got to be honest with you, you're the next generation of that.
Yeah, man. You got 10 kids, so, you know, you got to...
10 kids. Let's start there. Can I ask you a question that I hope you don't take offense to, but I think I would have a hard time doing? Can you name all your 10 kids right now? Go.
Yeah, Tony, Tamar, Malia, Alea, Christiana, Zaria, Honest, Kiyomi, Taylor, and it's one missing in here. Malia.
Dude, I got nine uncles that I've known my whole life, and I couldn't name them. I was like, 10 kids. You had your first kid at 22?
Nah, 17.
17?
I had 7 kids by the age of 22.
You had 7 kids by the age of 22?
Yeah, I'm from a country town. We ain't have no cable, so we ain't have one thing to do.
One stoplight.
One stoplight, man.
One stoplight, no condoms.
No condoms, man. Condoms were expensive.
Yeah.
But child support was more expensive, so yeah, I should have been thinking long term.
So when you had your first kid at 17, did you think, oh, I could get into this?
Oh, I was scared. Every child that I had, should have been, damn. Not again, you know what I mean? That's why I named a child before last Honest, because she was the only one that was honestly, I was living honest right at the time. But yeah, man, those kids, bro, I didn't mean to have either. They just happened, man.
I would love to have 10 kids.
Yeah, it's amazing now, man. You know,
And you're 30, well, you're 35.
35.
35 with 10 kids. Dude, you got retirement in the bag. One of those kids has got your DNA and is going to make up millions of dollars.
I hope so, because I've been watching them. It's just not all of them. I'm telling you that now. I'm telling you now. I've been watching. Like, damn. This one. God. Okay. Yeah, but.
I got one of those that I'll be paying for the rest of my life.
You know which one it is, too.
Yeah. She wants to go look at colleges. And I went, really? Are we sure?
Yeah, my son just went to college. He went to a junior college, man, to play basketball.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Wait, how old is your oldest?
He's 17.
17?
Yeah.
God damn, that's so now how many baby mamas?
Five, I think.
Five, you think?
Mm.
Wait, is there a possibility of a stray Country Wayne child floating around?
I hope not. It was one that it was a girl I dealt with in high school. She said a 14-year-old son was mine.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, I went to San Antonio, Texas to see, but he wasn't, though. Yeah, he wasn't. And it's crazy. The mother went through the transgender process. I didn't know. So when I got there, I'm like, I got a baby daddy. I didn't even know. I was confused, for real. This really happened.
Wait, for real? The mother transitioned?
Yeah, she transitioned. Not all the way, but she was on the outside.
It's got to be that first time you've ever heard one black dude look at another black dude going, "No, you have my baby."
Yeah, matter of fact, she was a white girl.
Oh, she was white?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder what percentage of white, I wonder what percentage of the black community transitions versus the white community.
I don't know. I don't really know. But she cool. Me and her cool. Like, she, I accepted it as soon as I said, I didn't know.
Yeah.
But no, me and her cool, though.
So when did you get your shit together?
Oh, man.
Hold on. For people that don't know, because I'm a fan.
Uh-huh.
You've been making internet material, Facebook material for a long time. You're like one of the first OGs in content.
2014, October when I started.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the pandemic kicked in and you doubled down on your game. Mm-hmm. And that's when you really kind of, that's when everything. So hang on, let's back up. I want to just back up. So what were you doing? I know what you were doing once you, from 17 before that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so selling drugs.
Yeah, I was selling drugs.
Yeah.
For sure.
And so I'm fascinated by the amount of, and I wonder if it's because it's our community,
mm-hmm.
meaning in the comedy community, mm-hmm. not a lot of people, there's seldomly do you hear a Greg Giraldo where I was a Harvard lawyer and then I became a comic.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us were I wasn't doing shit.
Yeah.
Byron Bowers, he was selling drugs. Miss Pat was selling drugs. Everyone I know was selling drugs. But I'm fascinated by the drug game because it seems it's super accessible. Meaning you can, it's easy to get into.
Yeah, it's easy to get into, man. The only thing you got to do is have a school check or income tax refund, and you in the game.
Really?
Yeah.
And so did you start with marijuana?
Nah, I went straight to cocaine.
Really?
Yeah, marijuana was too slow. The money was too slow.
Really? That's what I would have done. I would have been marijuana and changed my lifestyle.
They stay high too long with marijuana.
Really?
Yeah.
Cocaine
was the fast, it was the fast money, and that's what my uncles and daddy them all sold, and a lot of my uncles did, so they was my first customers.
For real?
Yeah. I had a lot of in-house customers, so I got to sell cocaine.
Was you ever done cocaine?
Nah.
Oh, for real?
Nah.
Oh, it's so good.
I never did it.
For real? Oh, it really delivers. It all the things it promises. You know how you go to a New Year's Eve party and you'll be I thought it was going to have more fun.
Yeah.
If cocaine's there, that New Year's Eve party is everything you wanted it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Cocaine, I sold it, but I never did it.
And really?
People were shocked I didn't do it either because everybody in the town knew my family. My family had did it so
really?
Much. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
And so, wait, where in Georgia? I'm on a map in Georgia. Where are you at? Because my wife's from a small town. My wife is, we find out how many people grew up in Leanne's town. I think it was 1,200.
1,200? Oh, we're a little bigger than that. We was 3,000.
So you guys are Leanne was, grew up in a place called Bowdoin, Georgia.
Bowdoin, Georgia?
Oh, 2,100.
Oh, your wife's from Georgia too?
Yeah, my wife's from Georgia.
That's what's up.
What's part of the reason, I feel like I'm drawn.
Where are you from?
I'm from Tampa.
Yeah, but you got this southern. Yeah.
No, what you're hearing? Sometimes when I talk to black guys, I do a little bit, I got to be honest with you, I do it. I can't help it. I would do it on TV. I didn't even realize I did it.
Yeah.
But I do it. And I watch other people do it, and I see them do it, and I go, oh, God. Tommy does it bad. Tom does it really bad.
Yeah, Tommy does it.
Tom's
he goes there.
He'll be like, damn. But, she's from Bowdoin, and so 2,200. And then you're from?
Millen, Georgia.
Where's Millen?
It's between Augusta and Savannah, right?
Okay, I know where that is.
Yeah, so it's kind of south, south of Atlanta, of Atlanta by Statesboro, Georgia. Yeah, Millen, Georgia, right?
Statesboro is where is that where the Allman Brothers are from?
Yeah, hello, yo, they got the blues. They
said, yeah. Georgia's an interesting fucking place because it really is. It really, in my opinion, you go to Florida, it's so flat. Did you go to Florida much as a kid?
Yeah, we used to go to Fort Lauderdale all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is Florida, it feels like someone built it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Georgia feels like it's been there forever.
Mm-hmm.
Especially those small towns where you drive through, I'm sure this is in Millen, but you drive through that one stoplight and you see the glass windows of the stores and those were here forever.
For sure.
Is it crazy to you, it's so funny, not funny, but when I think of racism in the South and you think of a town that Leanne's, there was 2,100 people.
Oh, yeah.
They knew each other.
Yeah, but
how could they still be racist when they were that, They knew each other.
I think it was more of even a trend. I think that's what it was, and they just took the longest to get out of that. But that's how I knew, even when Trump, I knew Trump was going to win.
Yeah.
When people was worried about him, like, he might not win, I'm like, no, I know his cousins. I know, I grew up with, he's going to win. So, because I grew up with those, and we kind of like, it was like racism, but it was like a family at the same time.
Yeah,
outside the world, and when we leave that town and we seen each other somewhere else in the city, we come together. Because we all felt like outcasts. But in those times, man, it's racist to the T.
What was the demographic makeup of your high school?
People was in high school, period.
Like, or just, no, or no, just like black,
more,
white.
Black, white, it probably, oh, I say 50-50 for real. Probably more like, probably 60-40 more white people. I
really?
Believe. Yeah.
And did you, like, my wife had never had Chinese food.
Oh, we had Chinese food. I ate Chinese food, rabbit, squirrel. I'm a country boy.
Leanne's had squirrel, rabbit,
yeah.
Frog.
Frog. No, I didn't eat the frog, but I ate the chicken feet.
Yeah.
Chicken feet, man. I ate everything. We ate, you know, black people, we eat everything off the pig. If we could catch the oink, we'll eat it. If we could put that oink in a pot.
I love showing to my daughters when you go into Southern convenience stores, mm-hmm. they got the barrel of pickled pig's feet.
Pickled pig feet. And I'm vegan now. So it's like.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm vegan. I've been vegan since 2015 because I ate so much of that stuff, man.
Oh, dude, I actually can't eat pulled pork anymore. I feel like I'm done with pork. Not bacon, but like I feel like I'm done with pork. I fucking love bacon so much. If cock tasted like bacon, I would have bruised knees. I'd be me too and dudes in steam room. Just,
Oh boy, you is funny, man.
Man, I love
they say bacon.
Bacon
do the same thing to my daddy heard yesterday. They say bacon do the same thing to the mind as cocaine.
I believe it. I believe it. And chocolate, too. If I have chocolate.
I'm like that with chocolate. You ever went on stage, ate chocolate, then went on stage?
No.
Yeah.
No, but I'm trying that. Do you know what I've done? I don't know if this is common knowledge, but Mitch Hedberg used to kill a bunch of vodka right before he did Letterman so that it hit him when he was on stage.
Yeah.
He liked the feeling of it hitting him. And I've done that before where I've been like.
How was that?
It's fucking phenomenal, but it's only good for like an 8-minute set. Because then when you're done, you're like, okay, this is going on too long. I need to sober up. I'm not good at stand up drunk. I can do it, but I'm not.
You know one of the funniest clips I seen you do?
What's that?
You were talking about the drinking. You were like, I'm not.
Oh, yeah. I'm never going to quit drinking. That's like
I'm going to stay healthy enough. So.
I feel like I'm on the line of that health right now. Some dude was like, dude, I play that every time before we go out and party on Saturday night. And I was like,
man, that was hilarious, man.
You can't pick what goes viral. You can't. I wish you could, because I'd be giving inspirational speeches about fucking something.
But you said what everybody wanted to say. Like, people just, that was a good, like, I'm going to stay, man, you were so serious, man. The delivery on that was, hey, man, that was just hilarious, man.
And that's what I love about, it's what I love about life. I love when you, I can't express it enough, but I love the spontaneity of life. I mm-hmm. love when you're not expecting something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if it's as simple as, like, the other day my daughter was like, I was home and she was home and she came downstairs. She was like, you want Taco Bell? That, oh man. I mean, my heart skipped a beat and I was like, well, yeah, hold on. She goes, I've been scrolling the menu in my room. They got the Mexican pizza back. And I was like, for real? And so I was like, let's find a Taco Bell. Cause I haven't eaten Taco Bell in a while. And so we went and got a Taco Bell. And I just gave him $200. I was like, just surprise us. Just make it razzle-dazzle. Yeah. And we fucked up Taco Bell. I felt sick as shit later.
Yeah.
But that moment of the enjoyment of spontaneity, I'll never want to get rid of.
That's living, though. Even when you're doing bad, you might as well enjoy it. Because whatever the punishment, I got to tell people all the time, just with bills. Like, I'm not about to worry and don't have the money. If I don't got the money for the bill, I'm not about to worry. Because that's two things that's going wrong. So
yeah.
Yeah. So I believe in that, man. Whatever you're going to do, enjoy it. Like, I'm a vegan, but I don't tell people what to eat, because if I was eating a pork chop and a vegan walked up to me and be like, you shouldn't be eating that, man, this, I just paid $12 for this. I'm about to enjoy me getting sick. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, that's you living, man. Bert, you's a liver.
So I am a liver. I better watch my liver. Hey, so what did 17-year-old Country Wayne look like? Just Wayne, were you always called Country Wayne?
No, I was Wayne then. But
just Wayne.
I was Wayne, but some people had called me Country in Savannah. I had been in Savannah for a minute. But, man, I was the guy that everybody trusted, though. Except for women sometimes. But everybody trusted, man. Whether it was black people, white people, I was the guy. I was like the negotiator of life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was the guy. I already had 2 kids on the way. And I loved women. Women is my thing. I always have been.
You gotta identify your thing.
Oh, yeah. Women. I told people, I chose my drug because it was no other drug better than a woman. Feeling when God gave, oh, my God.
See, I don't mind. I have no problem.
Is your beer fridge feeling a little empty? DoorDash is your door to beer without the run. Whatever drink you're in the mood for, they've got you. Order your alcohol with DoorDash today and drink in the savings. Use code BEARS 24 to get 25% off, up to $15 value on a $35 minimum subtotal on your next alcohol order for eligible users only. I mean, there's like sometimes you just don't want to leave. That's me. Once we're at a spot and we're hanging out, I just don't want to leave. And now you don't have to. The alcohol selection on DoorDash is top shelf. Beer, wine, mixers, mocktails, and more can be delivered straight to your door. Save up to 25%, up to $15 value when you spend $35 or more with code BEARS24. So whether you're grabbing drinks for an event or staying in for the night, DoorDash is here to help you have a great evening any evening. Terms apply. Must be 21 or older to order alcohol. Drink responsibly. Delivery and promotions available only in select markets. My favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. Wow, how have I been living like this? It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month, when you purchase a 3-month plan, more like, wow, how have I been affording this? It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. We use Mint Mobile at the office, and we have been saving so much money since switching over, and setting up on Mint Mobile's website was super easy. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/bears. That's mintmobile.com/bears. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/bears. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 months plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
I have no problem with my one, meaning like the prospect of all the shit that goes along with finding a new chick, it gives me anxiety. I was talking to Leanne about this last night at dinner with my daughter Isla, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. But I said, you don't ever have to worry about me cheating on you. And if I do cheat on you, know that it will be with someone very respectable. Yeah. It'll be with like Angelina Jolie or Charlize Theron. Like, it'll be a good L. Like, you'll be like, all right, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really... Even in college, when I was like looking for a girl, I was always looking for a girlfriend. I always wanted to find one person to be with and fall in love with. Like, I'm a regular person. I don't want people to think that I'm preaching or that I'm holier than thou.
No.
I'll go to a strip club. We'll have a blast. I'll have a fucking great time. My wife is very cool with that. But like, I'm not. It, when it comes to like where I show up at the end of the day, it's going to be with her, and it's going to be with her forever because I dig. The secrets you have with someone, the stories, the fact that you don't have to talk, like all the stuff that maybe I'm not good at in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm not, like you just saw me, I don't like silence. I want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But there's times I should be silent and I can do that around Leanne. She makes me laugh. Like I like all that shit. And it's almost like, imagine you find a really, this is a bad analogy. I hope she's not listening, but you find a really good fishing hole and you go, I enjoy catching bass.
Yeah.
I don't need to go tarpon fishing. I don't need to go marlin fishing.
You're a blessed man.
All I need is this.
I think every man wish for that for real. You found it, but I'm the type of person, I've dealt with a lot of women, but I'm going to be honest, that's what I've always wanted. And I've had relationships. I've been married before. It is, and that's the best thing. And nothing's more comfortable and feel better and secure than when you got that person that you with instead of trying to find other people. I'm just trying to find that one.
So wait, has anyone ever, because here's part of the deciding factor and why that I live like that. I always longed to trust someone.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning like there's a lot I love about my wife. And sometimes when I isolate certain things, it may sound like I'm ignoring other things.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say those so that everyone understands. I think she's beautiful. I think she's hilarious. All those, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Okay. Oh, we said it. Okay. She looks great naked. All the things that you're supposed to say about women that when you're married for 20 years, you kind of forget. The one thing I love the most about her is I know that I can trust her.
Mm.
I trust her more than any human being in the world. That is the coolest feeling. They've done it. I've had people try to do it with me and friends where they say, you know, your friend's doing this. And then you get worried. Am I getting fucked? Am I getting fucked?
Mm-hmm.
And then I only fuck with people that I trust you 100%. Anyone I don't, I can't fuck with you at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one person I know for a fact would legit fucking die for me. And she'd go broke with me. She'd live in a car with me. The only fucker is Leanne. That's the only motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
Like she is. And I watched you, someone try to say who broke up with who on a fucking radio show and I was just like, oh, I'm so glad I don't have to deal with that. But what I thought was cool that I couldn't deal with is I knew you in that conversation, you also didn't care. Like there was a real big sense of you not giving a fuck.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I'm not there anymore is what matters to me.
Yeah.
I heard that in your voice and I went, oh, I think she still cares.
Yeah, she cares, man. I that's one thing about me. I don't care about, I never care about what people say. And if I'm with somebody, like if I'm in here with you, I don't care about what nobody on the outside saying. It's me and Bert.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm that type of person. I just don't care. I don't have one care in me.
I want to get to how you got to where you are, because right now you're setting up to shoot your Netflix special. Mm-hmm. Your online presence is beyond impressive.
Mm-hmm.
You might be one of the highest earners I know in making creative content. Not just like I'm about content, but my content's all about driving. They're all advertisements for my stand up. Mm-hmm. I wish I could do more of what you do. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about Boozy. I want to talk to you about T.I. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about Drip. I want to talk to you. There's so much I want to talk to you about, but I really want to get to how you got to where you are, because that's the hardest part. Like if anyone's watching, especially anyone that wants to get into comedy,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of people going like, how do you do it? My story's weird, unique in that I got discovered by Rolling Stone magazine. So fuck, my story is not going to happen to you.
Yeah.
Like I got lucky. And I can give you, we can do the business talk and like we do behind the scenes all day long. But I'm curious about the guy you were. What age do you feel like you became a man?
A man? Real talk, I really feel like I became a man at 11 for real. I had to. But
why?
You know, my mom died at 11. So I was like out there. And I ain't have no boundaries. You know, I ain't have to come home at a certain time. So you ain't have to restrict.
But how'd she pass?
She had a stroke.
Yes, for real?
Yeah, she had a stroke at the age of 32. Yep. So at that point, you know, when your dad and I...
How many brothers and sisters?
With her, I got more on my dad's side, but her was my two sisters and me. I was the youngest. I'm the youngest on my mom's side, the oldest on my dad's side. Yeah. So I think, and to be honest, to connect with that story, to answer your question, when she died, we got a Social Security check. So we went from being broke. So we getting I'm getting $200 a month now from my mama from heaven. So I'm like, oh my God, thank you. You know what I'm saying? So I think to fast forward to like what you're saying now, I think what got me to this point of figuring out social media and all that, because I wanted to figure out how to sit home and make money.
Cause that's what you do. You do. I mean, you tour a lot.
Yeah.
You tour a lot, but you do like legit, I think 3 months at home and shoot. Is it 3 months at home and shoot a year's worth of content?
Yeah, I can shoot 30 skits in one day, and I pay other people now to, they've been dropping, my partners, I pay them per skit to drop skits on my page. So it's like my guy Mike, I give him $600 a skit, he do 4 or 5 skits a day. You know what I mean?
So it's like your page just turned into a network.
Yeah, it's a dope game. So I'm buying the ounces for $600, but they flipping for $18,000, $2,000, $3,000. You know what I'm saying? So it just, I applied everything I know to the internet, and the internet to me was the dope game all over again. I feel like I'm back selling drugs.
And now, and now the CIA wants to buy them out of Nicaragua and have you sell them just into your community because that's the way the business works.
That's the way the business works. And you got to work within the guidelines, but I'm on the platforms of Facebook and stuff, so they getting their percentage. Facebook and YouTube get their percentage. So I'm working with the system. I ain't trying to build my own platform.
So 11 years old, like, do you, not to get too serious, but like, what's it like losing a parent at 11? Your parents living together at the time?
Oh, nah.
No? Nah. So you were just living with your mom and your sisters?
Mm-hmm. And I felt like Kevin on Home Alone. So it's like, it was sadness at first and grief.
Okay, hold on. I know you make movies. That's the fucking movie. An adaptation of Home Alone, but it's your story of your parents just die.
Yeah,
just
die, man.
You're like, you've got a fucking, that's fucking insane. Like Kevin from Home Alone, keep going.
Yeah, and emotions left. It was like, well, nothing's going to happen worse than that. So I tried everything. I was never scared to try anything that, except for things that I seen hurt her, because she used to do cocaine, smoke weed, my uncles, my dad. So I stayed away from drugs, but I was just like, I had no fear. Because I was like a kid.
The worst shit that's gonna happen happens to you.
It already happened. So I'm like, you know, I ain't doing nothing crazy. Like, I ain't running in front of no car or nothing like that. I wasn't spazzing out.
Yeah.
But the fear was gone. Like, the fear of life, of trying to hold on to something, man, that was over with.
So did you move in with your dad?
I moved in with him for like 2 months, but he disappeared. Like, he literally, I went to my cousin's house for the summer, came back, he was gone. I moved in with my grandma.
I wish I could put my, like, I'm sorry that I'm asking so many questions. Great. What did it, like, I know what Leanne's hometown looked like, and it was mostly, like, for lack of better words, I apologize to anyone in Bowdoin if I'm underselling Bowdoin. There's nicer parts of Bowdoin, but Leanne didn't grow up there. Mm-hmm. Like, she grew up in like, more like upgraded trailer park.
Okay.
Like, upgraded, I don't know the right way to say it. Manufactured homes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what did your house look like?
We stayed in a 10 trailer, man, right by the railroad track. The railroad track was 100 feet, 10, 20, yeah, about 300 feet. And it used to shake the trailer. We had no heat, really? No air, you know what I'm saying? So it was like a 10 trailer. Summertime is hot and the wintertime is cold. And it was just,
and it does get cold as fuck in Georgia.
Oh, man, it get cold.
People forget that, like, that's like the beginning. For Southerners, from Floridians, because we had hot, it was hot all year round. Georgia was the beginning of the North for us.
Yeah.
Like, we were like, oh, you got mountains, you got hills, you got red clay. Like, this is like, we're in a different demographic.
Yeah.
You don't have alligators anymore? Okay, you guys are in the North.
Yeah, so it was 10 trailer, man. It was poverty. You know, we didn't have no money. So, yeah.
Buying someone jewelry is usually a great experience all around. They get a beautiful gift, and you get the unforgettable moment of seeing the look on their face when they open it. The only tricky part, figuring out how to get the perfect piece at the best price. This is what I recommend for any jewelry purchase. Source it from BlueNile.com. Blue Nile offers thousands of independently graded diamonds and fine jewelry at prices significantly below traditional retail. They also offer a peace of mind with every purchase, with some of the highest quality standards in the industry. They're available 24/7 by phone or chat to answer technical questions and give recommendations for every budget. The thing about buying jewelry is you really don't know what you're getting into. You don't know what you're looking at often. And the great thing about working with Blue Nile is you have somebody who is a true expert that can help guide you along the way so you don't feel lost, so you know what these diamond grades are, you know you're getting real value. You can feel great about your purchase because Blue Nile also offers a diamond price match guarantee. And just in case you don't, they offer 30-day returns. Shop Blue Nile today and experience the ease and convenience of the original online jeweler. Go to BlueNile.com today. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplish something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcast.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
That's crazy. And then so your mom passes. Who do you get advice from like, as like, I'm trying to figure out, I want to pick apart, because the thing is like all the formative years of me were done by my father, my uncle, mm-hmm. and my other friends' fathers, like where you look and go, oh, that's the man I want to be. You can see hints of who I am today mm-hmm. as a man based on my friends' dads and my dad and my uncle. You can mm-hmm. see that. So like at 11, who do you start getting advice from? Is it just your sisters or?
No, my uncles, my grandma, I got advice from everybody, but my dad and my uncles, when they were in their prime in the dope game, that's who I wanted to be. But they had started falling off after my mom died. But when they were in their prime, they was the guys that walked through with the money, the clean clothes, the you know, the good energy. You know, because none of my family was violent. We was hustlers, but never guns wasn't our thing.
Yeah.
It was just like women and money. So, yeah, it was my uncles and my daddy. I was, you know, and my uncles, I used to ask a lot of questions to all grown people. Whether they had money or not, I pick out what I want from them, what I need to know. I ask my grandma, like, grandma, what y'all liked about men back in the day? Da, 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 da. And I apply that to today because I knew before I even ever read the Bible, I already knew that nothing's new under the sun. So yeah. I would listen to people. I'm a great listener.
Like I'm a horrible listener.
Yeah.
I might be the worst listener alive. I'm the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. I would watch people and I would see the things I didn't like mm-hmm. and I would just apply that to my life.
Oh, Bert, you're hilarious, man.
I would just go like, I was like, ooh, I don't like this guy's throwing up in the front yard. He's a grown-up. This doesn't look good. Don't ever be the guy to throw up in the front yard. Don't ever be the guy to throw. Like, I remember those moments. And yeah. And to this day, there's a song by Perfect Circle called Judith. And their opening line is how I formed my life. You're such a great example for the way that I never want to be. And so I looked at those and tried to identify those. And it's so funny. I never. And then the things I wanted, like I remember I wanted an odd colored Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah.
Like I liked my buddy Cayman and Croy's dad had a brown Mercedes-Benz, like a brown
mm-hmm.
with a brown interior. And I thought, that's cool. It's such a way to not give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, you see people with the flashy colors cars and he rolls in and something, it said something about his personality. I didn't buy that car. I have bought cars like that, but the car I have now, has a chocolate interior and Leanne didn't like it. And I went, yeah, but that's why I like it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And what did you see as a kid that you went, well, I'm gravitating towards that. I want one of those, or I need like
my
that.
My dad had a Grand National, man, 1986.
Grand National,
and I got one now. Yeah, I got a Grand National steel. You know, it's parked in my garage now.
There's a Grand National community. There's a dude I follow. I think I follow him through Carlos Miller.
Yeah,
I think I follow him through Carlos, where the guy goes, hey, man, you guys keep asking. I'm not selling my Grand National, but here it is, and he just shows it off every day, and I go. What are you showing it off for? What is it about a Grand National that you like?
Man, it's just got that style, man. Look at it. It's that G body. It got that lean to it. It got that talk to it. And that turbo is, it whistles when you match the gas. And, you know, it just got that thing. My dad had one. And it's something about a Grand National.
Kevin Hart has a Grand National.
Yep, Kevin Hart has one.
All right, I'm buying a Grand National.
Yeah, man, you got to
buy a Grand. Do I remember driving in a Grand National for the first time and being like, that and the only other one, it was a Lincoln Mark V mm-hmm. was the coolest car I've ever been in.
Mm.
It was a Lincoln Mark V. No, it was not a Lincoln Mark V. It was type in Type in 1987. Just type in Linkin Park and then 1987. Can you believe I lived in the 90s? Yeah, that's the car. That was a badass fucking car.
Yeah, yeah.
That purple one right there. It was two-door. It was fucking... That was a badass fucking car.
It's clean, man. It's like cars back then had this thing to it.
Yeah, and it was comfortable in the back seat, but we were skinny then, so everything was comfortable.
Yeah.
And we rolled joints in that car, and you felt like you were untouchable.
Yeah, man. Nice car, man. It got that... You know, so that's what I like. The nice cars and... Clean, you know, it's like to be clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a car does so much for you. And it's funny, LA's a car culture.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia's a car. I was trying to explain this to my buddy you just met, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like our taste in music is based on cars.
Mm.
Because we took in, it's the same as tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the delivery system.
Mm-hmm.
So like in the South, a lot of people dip because they're outside, they're dipping, they're doing stuff with their hands, so they have time to smoke cigarettes. So then that's their delivery system, is through tobacco
mm-hmm.
in your mouth. In New York, you're out, you're quick, you're smoking a cigarette. There's nowhere to spit because it's everywhere. So no one, I remember when I moved to New York, I noticed no one dips. So it's because you're spitting on it's gross.
Mm-hmm.
But in the South, you could just spit. So then all of a sudden I'm smoking cigarettes and I'm like, well, this is fucking stupid, I don't smoke. But at the same time, I realized the hip-hop that I had grown up on was all meant to be taken in a car.
Mm.
Outkast is a car,
mm-hmm.
that is a car band.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to this to New York and you're like, oh, Wu-Tang Clan, they want you to hear that in your ears.
Mm.
They don't give a fuck if you're in a car. I would argue Wu-Tang doesn't play great in a car.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's me, by the mm-hmm. way. So, I can't believe you want to talk about cultural appropriation.
Ooh.
I'm a 50-year-old white man explaining to a black man about hip hop. Mark this down in the things I get canceled for. But like, that's what one of the things I noticed was like, everything's a delivery system. Like Dr. Dre, Snoop, mm-hmm. that's all feels to me, that's car music.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I guess New York's only like New York, Philly,
mm-hmm.
like the Fresh Prince was like all very lyrical.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and so I there's certain songs I can't listen to in my car.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
You know, and especially Miami bass music.
Yeah.
That's meant to be driven slow through. Like that's,
you got it down to a side. You a deep thinker, Bert. Like,
I was up all morning thinking about this. I was up all morning thinking about how I was trying to isolate my favorite moments in music,
mm-hmm.
and why I veered from hip, like I'm not listening to hip hop mm-hmm. right now I'm not, and I'm listening to a lot of the Grateful Dead, but there's been periods in my life where I go into the Grateful Dead, Fish, Wilco, like all these like jam bands, mm-hmm. and then there's times I go really thick into hip hop, and I'm trying to figure out for a joke, obviously, why I choose hip hop at certain points in my life, and what hip hop I've chosen, and mm-hmm. why I've chosen it,
yeah.
And I was trying to isolate the first hip hop song I ever listened to.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first? I mean, I'm assuming it was in your house.
Yeah. I think the first.
What year were you born?
I was born 1987.
Okay. So I'll tell you what was 1987. There was the big thing in 1987 was Jam On It.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Jam On It? Jam On It. Jam On
yeah,
It.
Yeah.
I said jam on it.
Yeah.
This day comes to night and night turns to day. And Jam On It. And then there was this band called Mantronics mm-hmm. that had this song Baseline that was really popular.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to go back to find the first hip hop song that I listened to that I went, that's it.
I think mine was on that I really listened to and paid attention to. I think it was Tupac. I think Tupac was, yeah.
So that's got to be, I'm going to guess, 1990.
Razor Blade. Yeah.
1990, probably 94. Five, I'm guessing.
When I really listen, because I was, for some reason, I always been an R&B guy. I'm really? An R&B guy, man. I'm an R&B guy.
Like, what's define R&B to me? Like, you mean like Luther Vandross and
Luther Vandross? Yeah, people like that. You know, Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm an R&B guy. I love the smooth R&B, good music.
I like older Otis Redding. Mm-hmm. Like,
okay, yeah.
Otis Redding's a tragic story. You know his story?
Yeah, what happened?
He had one album out. I think it was only out for like, not, type in Otis Redding. He died. He put out an album, his one album, and then he died immediately thereafter. I'm thinking of the right person.
Like how long after?
Like 8 months after putting out this fucking amazing album.
Wow, how did he die?
I think go to his Wikipedia. I just picked my nose.
That's crazy.
I just straight up picked my nose. Go to his Wikipedia. Go to his Wikipedia. This is discography.
I did not know that, man. That's crazy.
Go to his Wikipedia.
I got my white brother explaining to me about a black legend artist.
Go in,
go
in. Go to death. Go to death. Death. 1967. I think it was a plane crash. It was a beach craft, yeah. He appeared on an Upbeat television show he's produced in Cleveland. But I think he'd only put out, he was very young in his career.
Mm.
1967. See when his first hit, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, was released in 1968. So like everything came out posthumously. He died at 26 years old.
Mm.
He died at 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's so fucking young. I mean, it's not young back then. Elvis was like fucking 30 when he died, I think. Mm. but 26 then is old, way older than us today. But like, you could do things less under a microscope.
Mm. Exactly.
You know, I just watched Elvis. Elvis was 42 when he died. I just watched the movie Elvis. Have you watched it?
Yeah, I watched it.
I was like, well, I was blown away by just how much he outright stole from black people. Like, it was like, you're like, oh, those, he didn't write any of those songs. So he just watched black people play the song. I was like, I can do that. I mean, he literally took everything.
Yeah.
I mean, and then sold it to white people, and white people, the white establishment, hated it because they were like, he's doing black people stuff up here.
Yeah.
You're not, we don't want anything. It's fucking insane to me.
Yeah.
That movie made me cry.
Yeah, and then Colonel took a lot from him. Like, it's crazy.
The Colonel was a fucking bastard.
That was crazy, man.
That dude was a bad fucking
dude. It make you think, man. It make you, nah, there's some good managers and agents out there. Let's give it up for managers and agents. But it do make you look at certain people funny.
Okay, here's a question. Do you have that brain? Could you go full Elvis,
mm-hmm.
where you say, or I say, I'm going to sign a deal with you, okay? Mm-hmm. $20 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about the rest of the money. $20 million a year. You're going to keep doing what you're doing, $20 million a year. Netflix special every 18 months. You're going to do a movie every year. We need you to keep putting out content. I'm going to put you on my schedule. You're getting $20 million a year. Don't worry about the rest of the money, but I'm going to get you $20 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you're on Elvis' time. And could you give up, knowing what happens behind the scenes, the way the Colonel was making all that money at the casinos to clear his debt and unlimited gambling,
uh-huh.
could you do that and just be happy? It's because ultimately this comes back to women.
Yeah.
It's like with Leanne, yeah, I could do that.
Yeah. I couldn't do that. Not at this state.
No.
Nah. I couldn't do that.
You'd be up at night going, how much are they making?
Yeah,
what's the full amount of money brought in?
Yeah, I just at this point I know too much. But you know, if somebody come grab me from the beginning like that, you know, ain't no telling what I'll do. But I'm street. I know how to get out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not violent. I figure out, man, I save my money, but you know, you can always buy your way out of something with your own money. But.
We were talking about that the other day. 360 deals, you know, those mm-hmm. are?
Yeah.
I had a company try to put me into a 360 deal, and I realized what was happening. Mm-hmm. A little late, but I realized, and I was like, whoa, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
No, you don't get everything. You want everything I do? No.
Because you're going to be able to sleep. I feel like when business is not right, your life can't be right. So I think to be a good artist, that business have to be right.
Yeah.
And if not, you're gonna feel it. Your art gonna suffer from it because it's hard to perform, man, when that business is not right. And people just, man, it's too many people try to pull off it, you know?
What was the thing that got you out of the drug game?
Oh, the comedy. The same phone I was hitting licks.
By the way, you've blown up. You got three phones now.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure which ones are which because I have two phones. I'm about to get a third. Yeah. I'm about to get a third for me.
This the one I film my content on, so all my videos.
I have even more. Keep going.
I talk on this one personal, and this one's just in case it got the same iCloud. So just in case I'm on this, I could go live with this one or something. But yeah, but nah, I got to draw.
If you meet a girl tonight, what phone number do you get? What phone does she get?
She gonna get this one for sure.
Okay.
I'm trying to meet a wife though, Bert. You know, I want a wife.
I can set that up.
I want a wife. I want to come in and my hat's hung up, real nice. I want to come home. I don't have to worry about things. Just yeah.
I wish I could bring. That would be a cool TV show if I could bring all my wife's ex boyfriends over, and just go look what she did.
Yeah,
she did this with me. I'm nothing. Imagine what she could have done with you. You'd a Range Rover when she met you.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
that's crazy. So how did how old were you when the comedy started popping off?
Well, 27. I was 26, going on 27. But 27. I had a nightclub, so I was 26.
Wait, hold on, started then back it up. When did you get a nightclub?
Well, I got there 2014. Also, before I took off. It's crazy. All that happened at the same time. But before that, I was throwing parties. But I got nightclub 2014. Went viral 2014.
First video went viral was the...
You have to fake like you like your girlfriend's cooking. Man, that video, people in Israel, guys from Israel were commenting.
Wait, is it still up?
Yeah, it's
on
YouTube.
Can you play it?
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, play it. Would you play it, Austin?
We have to fake like you like your girlfriend's cooking.
By the way, I live with my wife. I should get this video. My wife can make, you'll get this, My wife makes, we can hear each other with these on.
Okay.
My wife makes, because she grew up in like a poor part of it. All the ingredients come out of like a Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah, so we had a Piggly Wiggly.
So she's like, you're like, wow, this is great. And she's like, Granny, tell them what you made in this. She goes, well, you need a sleeve of Ritz crackers. You need two Slim Jims. Pour a little Mellow Yellow in it. And you're just like, oh, this isn't fucking good. Look at how young you are.
Yeah, I was young, man.
Did it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
just
tried it.
No, you don't got good.
You sure?
Mm-hmm. You ready?
This piece got a lot of cheese on it.
Taste
that piece.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's perfect. 27 seconds.
Yeah, man.
No editing.
No.
Audio's good because the phone's up close. You shot it vertical, which no one was shooting vertical then.
Yeah, I started vertical, man. The reason why I never edited because I was so country. I thought movies were filmed. I didn't know about editing.
Shooting like everything was the Birdman?
Yeah, I'm thinking everything straight through. So I didn't find out until 2016 that things are edited.
Turns out you're not country, you're Dutch. Yeah. That's like a big movement in Scandinavia to shoot everything just one shot.
Oh yeah, so that's what I grew up. So that's how I still to this day I shoot my content, no editing. I just shoot it.
Really?
Yep.
And so because I heard you break down like the brilliance of a video,
mm-hmm.
shoot it vertical on your phone,
mm-hmm.
and no editing.
No editing, man. That way, as soon as I film a video, it's up immediately making money.
So how many takes do you do when you do a video with Boosie?
Boosie, I think it was two.
Two?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was I couldn't tell if he was acting or not.
Nah, he was kind of serious, man. He got kind of serious, especially when I pulled out the money. He was like, yeah, so.
He said, we all got money.
Yeah, he got serious about that.
And you're like, you said the line that you will be hearing come out of my mouth is know that it's coming from Boosie. You'll know when I'm mad, my eyes get yellow.
Yeah, my yellow eyes. I got yellow eyes, like my dead eyes. Yeah. I said, okay. Let's shoot. They was getting light orange, so I said, it's time to get out of here, man. Boosie get mad. But no, he was cool.
How much did you hang out with him before you started filming?
Oh, I didn't hang out that long.
You just went up?
No, it was about 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah?
He was late to his house.
Yeah.
Yeah. So his family was there, so I seen them there. But then he popped up late, and we filmed the video, and I talked to him a little bit, and we dealt.
Yeah?
Yep.
And then what was it like working with T.I.? Because T.I. seemed like it might have been more than one take.
Oh, yeah, T.I. was cool. He kept laughing, but T.I., man, that was my guy that I looked up to in the rap game.
Okay, let's celebrate T.I.
Yeah. Yeah.
T.I. might be – there's lines that I loved. Was it ATL was his movie with Big Boy?
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines of any movie ever, ever, ever. It's in that movie. Do you know what it is? Big Boy delivers it to T.I. when he pulls up in the car.
Okay, hold up. What was the car? I know he asked about the money. What did he say to T.I.?
He pulls up and he goes, I don't know if you've heard. light skinned brothers ain't in
oh, yeah, style no
in
more.
Style
yeah,
no more.
That's right.
As a
yeah.
Light skinned guys ain't in style no more.
That's crazy.
What man. A funny fucking lie. I'm sure I probably don't get it the way everyone's supposed to get it, but I just thought it was such a funny thing to say to someone. Mm-hmm. Like if you pulled up and you're like, oh, I don't know if you heard, redheads aren't in style no more.
Yeah. Definitely, man. That was a hood classic, man.
It's cool to see him doing all these different things too, because he's a guy that is podcasting now.
Yeah,
he's doing stand up now.
Yeah, he's doing stand up. T.I., man, he was supposed to be the one. He was one of the only rappers that everybody kind of agreed on. Not everybody, but everybody from every group of people agreed on. You know what I'm saying? You got the hood, the church. Some people in the church liked him. The white people, black people. He was one of those ones, man. Who was that? Dale Earnhardt?
Was it Dale Earnhardt Jr.?
Yeah, he had the car commercial.
Oh, man. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, he had the NASCAR, man. He was...
He's smooth as fuck.
Yeah, he was smooth, man. He was the guy that really made me. I was working a job at a power plant because I had stopped hustling one time. I tried not to sell drugs. I was working a construction job. I was happy with my kids. I didn't even care about being famous anymore. My son was real good at baseball, so I was like, I'm going to live through him.
Yeah.
But, man, I seen a video with T.I., whatever you like, and he was sitting on a private jet, and I looked down at my steel-toe boots, and I started crying a little bit. I said, oh, man. I got to get back out here in these streets, you know, turn up.
But yeah.
He was one of the ones that inspired me to keep chasing my dream for real.
I remember I used to parent using T.I.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Georgia got into there was an issue at school, and I remember playing You Don't Know Me.
Yeah.
And I was like, Georgia, they don't know you. They may think they know you, but they don't know you.
Yeah.
And I said, let me let you listen to T.I.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia and me and the girls, it's going to sound so horrible. They said it to me the other day. They go, we were talking about songs I should come out on stage to. And they were like, what about that one, the three things you're not supposed to do? And I said, oh, Alcohol, Pussy, and Weed by MJG and 8-Ball.
Mm.
And they're like, yeah, you used to play. And then someone was like, you used to play that for your daughters? And I go, all the time. But my daughters were into the beats. I like my top, lay it back, lay it back.
I like my beat, down low. Yeah.
Bring them out. T.I. has so many bangers,
mm-hmm.
Do you remember when he called out, what's his name, for a Versus?
Who was 50? No.
He said to 50, he goes, yeah. you're the Nelly of the North.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he'll crush 50, man.
And so what was it like shooting with T.I.?
Oh, it was cool, man, you know, because we had a show that next night, comedy show that he came to. Man, it was dope, man. It was just him, that character I had created, Drip, was so accepted by the hip-hop community. It was just like, a dream come true for real.
Yeah, and was he an active participant in that, whereas Boosie was a little more like, Drip shined, T.I. was just like hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It was more artistic for real, you know, shooting T.I. But man, it was great, man. That character Drip got so popular, I had to stop doing him.
Yeah.
Yeah, Drip got too popular.
Really?
Yeah.
You really could have just done that on stage. You could have just transitioned and just done Drip on stage the way like Larry the Cable Guy or a lot of guys, their characters get so big they can just transition and that goes on stage.
But I was like, how long did that last? I was worried about that.
It could. You can. I think what they do is like. I mean, look at Bobcat. You know Bobcat Goldthwait.
Uh-uh.
So he's a very popular comedian in like the. Sadly, it really is before you were born. It sounds crazy to say, but like a Police Academy was a huge series of movies,
mm-hmm.
and he played this character like.
Mm-hmm.
He was more avant garde than the average stand up. This is when stand up was in suits,
and
for white comics, they were in suits and they were like, so whatever happened to the dot, dot, dot? Mm. Jerry Seinfeld and him hate each other.
Mm.
They hate each other. And so Jerry Seinfeld hated this because Jerry Seinfeld was very much like, whatever happened to the other sock? I'm not doing a good Jerry Seinfeld impression either. Uh-huh. I'm not representing either of these gentlemen well. But like, there were the two sides of stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bob has since morphed into what he does now, which is just straight stand-up where he talks, tells stories, and mm-hmm. you can see a hint of where this character came from, mm-hmm. a hint of what was making him nervous on stage. He'd accentuate it. Mm. But this was at a time when, like, Larry the Cable Guy was big. You know Larry the Cable Guy?
For sure.
And Larry the Cable Guy was just, his name is not Larry the Cable Guy. He would call into radio stations as this character, and then he'd show up to the comedy club and do that character. You could have very easily done that with Drip, and then, like Larry and like Bob, kind of morph it a little bit into who you really are. Mm-hmm. But it's a tough.
I was bigger than Drip, right? So I was Country Wayne doing. I was selling at comedy clubs before Drip.
Yeah.
So Drip came. Thank God I didn't start as Drip because I understood characters.
That would have been a prison.
Yeah, it's like Madea, like Tyler Perry, but Madea so big. He couldn't get bigger than Madea, and eventually characters don't keep working.
I watched one of those Madea movies.
Mm-hmm.
I see it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, man. You don't need... This is the thing about... And I think I might have heard you say it also. There was a baby blue Mustang convertible, and my dad said, you know, hey, we can get a good deal on this. It wasn't a convertible, baby blue Mustang,
mm-hmm.
Two door. And I think they all were two door, like in the '80s, 85. Mm-hmm. And my dad's like, hey, I can get a good deal on this. If you like this car, we'll get it. And I said, who the fuck wants a blue, baby blue Mustang? And my dad goes, not everyone wants a fucking red or black Mustang. Like, there are other people in this world. That is the most prophetic statement when it comes to art.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone is 50 Cent or going to be a 50 Cent or going to be the coolest guy in the club that has tons of money and tons of jewelry that wants to see the flashiest comedian. There are a lot of, like, the church community, I think you said it was aunties who have money who want to go and enjoy comedy and enjoy mm-hmm. Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to have, like Dane Cook had the coolest fucking fan base.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need, there is that people, and then there's their friends they work with. And there's lots of people out there that you can cater to. It doesn't have to be the hottest, prettiest people in the world.
Mm-hmm. And I think if you treat your audience the best, I think that's when other people come. It's like a woman. When they see you treat your woman good, that's when they come. So when you just cater to your audience and really feed them, other people come join because they want to be treated like they're being treated. Because the people they follow might not be treating them the same. So I believe in that motto. It's just... Man, because everybody's connected deep down anyway. So I believe if you just treat your audience the best, other people will come.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and at what point did you start realizing you had an audience?
It was 2000. As soon as I started, I just knew. I was ready for the moment. I was waiting on the moment anyway.
Yeah.
So I just, man, as soon as I started, I got 2,000 followers, and I knew I'm about to blow up.
Really?
I knew I was going to blow up. I dropped 3 videos a day after that for like a year straight. And just kept grinding, and by I jumped out 2014 October. By that March, I had 1 million followers on Facebook.
Holy
and after
shit.
That, I just kept grinding. Kept grinding.
And what year is this?
2014, 2015. Yeah. I picked up. 1 million.
I saw you for the first time 2017.
Yeah,
is when I started really focusing on social media. I saw you on 2017 on Facebook, and I was like, whoa, you were huge. You're huge
yeah.
now, but
I had kind of stopped by then. With grinding on a year straight, I was doing enough where I could make $1 million a year doing clubs. So what I was doing, I was getting good in comedy, and I left social media. I didn't fully come back again for real until the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because I was, I jumped off and then started doing stand-up. So I had to go put them hours in.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of disappeared from social media, but I had did enough grinding in 1 year.
So you had just a digital footprint that was floating
yeah,
around.
Yeah, I was going to make, yeah. And then, you know, yeah, so I was getting good on stage. When I came back, I knew how to. When this pandemic hit, I just knew. I know the social media game. Yeah, I just know that. It's a game. You know, I always, when I was young, I seen my daddy them sell by their drugstores, and they was getting the bricks for like $16,000. And when I got in the dope game, I was paying $32,000. I'm like, man, I wish I was back then. I always wanted to be the beginning of something. I said, if I ever catch the beginning of something, I'm going to take a full advantage of it. And that's what it was with social media. I was like, oh, I'm at the beginning of this, so I'm going to learn the ins and outs. And you kind of could see the way the game's going. It makes you understand kind of Hollywood, too. Once you ever start working on your car and then learn because you did one step, two steps, So that's how social media is. It made me understand the industry. I'm like, oh, if I've got this little piece of sand and I'm able to pay my cast and everybody, you know, $200,000 a month, it costs me $200,000 a month to make that content. So I ain't just profiting $500, $600. But I was like, imagine what the studio was really making by owning this content. So that's what made me like, man, I got to help write these moves and get behind them and try to get a part of that back end.
Well, you need to succeed a little bit on your own turf to before you can go, oh, I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like we did for my movie that we did a scene in this one place they were just going to tear down. And I was like, whoa, hold on. You just built a whole scene? Like, you know what any of us would do with that. If we had a scene, you built a whole set. It's lit and everything.
Yeah.
Can we shoot something else in here? And they're like, what? I said, I don't fucking know. But like, we're not just, I mean, cost effective wise, it's a half day. We're done the scene. But like, and so we shot another scene and it became the end of my movie. And so you go, and then I started thinking, so I'm useful. Like you need a little bit of belief in yourself. Because not everyone's built, like, I think Kevin Hart was built successful. I know he had a rough childhood, but there's a part of Kevin Hart that he doesn't get caught up in the bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
He lets you think whatever he wants you to think about him, but he's going to outwork you, he's going to outthink you, and he's going to out-earn you no matter what part of the day. Kevin Hart's, I want to say, one of the most prolific fucking guys around.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But everyone needs that little Kevin Hart moment where you go, I think I can do this. Where I think Kevin showed up and was like, I can do this to everything. I don't think Kevin's ever doubted in himself.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I need those moments to go where, oh, I can make a little something. I can be contributional. I can contribute mm-hmm. to this.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think that's, and God bless you for doing stand-up and getting into stand-up and letting the two meet up. Because that's the move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember Logan Paul. Me and Logan Paul had talked in the beginning. And he kind of was giving me game on the internet because I wasn't making money yet. I was just getting, but they were getting money. So he was sharing information with me. And I was sharing information with him. I was like, well, y'all better get on that stand-up. Because imagine Logan Paul would have really did stand-up. You would never have had this.
Logan Paul's a really interesting motherfucker.
Yeah.
I'm really fascinated by him and his brother because I think they did it on a different level with the boxing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's always unclear what people make in those things, but like if Logan Paul had gotten into even just live podcasts,
mm-hmm.
they would be doing arenas.
Arenas, man. Because a lot of people dodge that. I see a lot of comedians come up in the game, they get popular online, and they dodge stand-up because everybody knows stand-up the hardest art. I've seen comedians dodge that stage. They'll do anything to dodge it. And I'm like, man, you got to go through it because if you ever go through it, man, and learn it, it's a craft that ain't too many people going to learn.
No, it takes a lot of sucking.
Yeah.
But I think there's a correlation so I'm on the other side where I've seen a lot of comics avoid what you're doing
because
they don't want to, I'm a comedian. This is what I do. I do this stuff on stage. What they're afraid of doing is putting out 3 videos a day and letting 3 videos suck
mm-hmm.
and not getting any traction off of them and then putting out 3 the next day and letting them suck and then putting out 3 the next day and having 1 do pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the thing about, you know, especially about social media. And I've always said this, just turn the camera on. That's how you got to start.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn it on, that's the best way to start.
Mm-hmm.
And then let the content show up.
Mm-hmm.
You will find something there. And don't be afraid to post. I had a guy when Instagram stories came out. It's one of my favorite stories. Sean Patton. He's one of the best fucking comics. One of the best.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best fucking comics. What I'm saying, like, one of the most prolifically talented dudes I've ever seen grace a stage. Mm-hmm. He is that good. He's got an NBC special out right now. Everyone should go check it out. It's on Peacock, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He is so fucking talented. We went skiing. This is my favorite story about one of my favorite stories about Sean Patton. And I was trying to explain to him Instagram stories. And I go, just post it. And he goes, yeah, but what if it's not right? And I said, don't worry, it's going to be right. Whatever you post is fucking right. Just post it. I watched him make a cup of tea in Utah. We were mm-hmm. in Utah. And I recorded him on my stories. making him a cup of tea, and he was trying to put it on Instagram stories, and he was just overthinking it. And he was like, hey, everybody, hang on, it looks better this way. And so he deleted it. I recorded 15 times of him trying to make a cup of tea and record it. He never posted it. I had 150,000 views on all of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it was just so funny at him overthinking, a guy who never overthinks on stage.
Yeah.
Says whatever the fuck's on his mind on stage. Mm-hmm. But in this moment, he was overthinking it. And that's one of the things that, like, the older comics could learn from the younger comics is, like, just make shit.
Make it, man. It's I think it's a way, like, I think social media is a way that everybody been begging and praying for. And it came, and people, like, you know, people been begging for power away from the industry, right?
Yeah.
Then it came, they're like, no, we want to give all our power back to the industry. It's like, man, hold up now. You want some independence because the industry don't want nobody unless you already popping now. Let's be real. They're not into that stage anymore of going to the groundwork.
No.
You know, and they're like.
Cecil B. DeMille's gone.
Yeah. It's like, man, nobody ain't going to discover. I remember, this when I knew times had changed. You remember Coming to America 2 came out. And the comedian, I'm a fan of him, Jermaine. That movie dropped. I remember the next day he got out. He was on Instagram with the he did a post we had the crown on, and it was like, what? It didn't go viral like he wanted it to or whatever. But imagine 10-20 years ago if he would have dropped that movie like that, you'd have started the next day. I think Tiffany Haddish was one of the last ones where you could drop, and it just, you know, that time, at like the pandemic just erased that. It's like you already got to be grinding or
anything. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, it's weird, man. It's like the times have changed so much, it kind of put everybody on a level playing field. And I think it's fair. People think it's unfair. I'm like, no, it's fair because now a country boy who nobody would have seen me. I'm from a town. You can't get out of those country towns.
No.
You know what I mean?
I think it's hard to get out of Tampa.
Yeah, so it's hard to get out of Tampa, and y'all got way more resources than us. So I feel like the internet made it the playing field level. It's like when Tiger King came out. It was so hilarious because we really don't get to see that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But now with everything, you can see everybody. Everybody got a chance. And I believe, you know, coming from my point of view, man, I'm like, this is the best thing that happened because I never would have got seen. Because you got to come to L.A., and it cost some. I would have been one of them guys standing on the corner. Probably, I would have had some drugs in my hand. I've been out here selling drugs, trying to survive. So the internet is just. Yeah.
You ever see Randy, wide receiver?
Or Randy Moss?
Randy Moss.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever see him go home? I don't know where I saw this, but he went home. He grew up in West Virginia, like small town.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "This is where I would have been." By the way, I'm sure I'm making this better than it was.
Mm-hmm.
But he showed where his friends and him hung out when they were young.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually still there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was behind a convenience store.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, hey, what's up?
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, oh, that is how, I mean, that I know Tampa's a bigger town than where you grew up or where Leanne grew up. Mm-hmm. But, like, you do not leave those places. And those places become who you are for the rest of your life. It's hard to get out. And you're right. I think people complained for so long, oh, there's only 3 tastemakers, NBC, CBS, and ABC. And then there's only 10 tastemakers, HBO, Comedy Central. And now that the internet's the tastemakers, it almost seems like people want to go back to that old institutionalized comedy where we had to get approved.
Yep. They don't want to be free. It's like, man, a lot of people complain to the opportunity to come because it's not there. So it's easy to say, man, if I had that opportunity, the opportunity came. And now it's going to separate those who lazy and those who work.
Yeah.
It's all about, man, listen, right now it ain't about no color or nothing. You better work. And the internet, that's what it is. Just work. Like, just look what you got going on. Use a machine.
Start a podcast. I've always said this to everyone.
Yeah.
Start a podcast and don't care what anyone says. If you enjoy it, then just enjoy it. It feels good. I think a lot of people don't think this way. It feels good to put out content that you're proud of.
Exactly.
And go, like, I'm excited. I hope people like it.
Yeah, exactly, man.
And it sucks when they don't.
Yeah, it sucks when they don't. But, hey, but at least we go through the trial and error. Most of the time, we go through the trial and error a lot before we blow up because we started.
Yeah.
So we kind of learned the algorithm of.
Well, I think we learned how to swim in a baby pool. Like, when you look at, like, celebrities trying to, like, get into social media when they're already established celebrities, I think they're afraid of failing. That's why I applaud Will Smith. I know it's not a popular thing to do in comedy these days. Mm-hmm. I've known Will for a long... I met Will a long time ago. He was a mentor to me. I still always love Will. But like when he did his YouTube channel, he leaned into social media. I was like, good for him. Mm-hmm. Good for him because he doesn't need to do that, but he was trying to do it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, man, more of that shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, because it's the future, man. It's like those people who got into that movies back in the day when theaters was popping. The internet is going to hit its cap, right? But you better get in now because you're getting a piece of the beginning. The guys who in it now strong, they're going to be the evolution. They're going to be the controlling of other people's channels. And like,
yeah, because when you talk about the dope, by the way, I'm hoping... You have a book that's out right now, right?
Yeah, Help Is On The Way.
Help Is On The Way, and it's a biography, but it is also a little bit of a self-help book.
Yeah, it's definitely a self-help
book. And please tell me, because I'm sitting here when you're talking to me is going, you should teach an economy class based on drug dealing to kids, because this is the easiest way to explain. When you say, I remember my father got kilos for 16. We got it for 32. I want to be at the front of something again.
Mm-hmm.
I remember having that feeling. I remember watching Dane Cook say to me, this is my space. You should try it. And me going, no, I'm not going to do it. And when Instagram showed up, I said, oh, this is going to be fun. I'm better. I'm not really good at like typing and telling you about myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm better at saying it and doing pictures. And this is more my medium. And I was like, oh, I don't want to be caught behind on this. And then when Instagram stories started, and I was like, oh, I did the same with vlogging. I fucking wanted to do a vlog. And with Instagram stories, I remember when they said you could swipe up and sell tickets. It was a game changer.
Game changer, man.
It's a game changer. You're talking direct to the consumer.
Yeah, definitely. That's how I seen it, man. When I used to promote my clothes first. So I understood, man, and to me, it was just like candy.
So then what's going to happen with you? You got your Netflix special, you got the book out, you got, you're on tour?
Yeah, on the tour, and I did a show with Taco Waititi and Lisa Kudrow on Apple TV. It come out this year, too.
That's big.
Yeah.
That's big. He's the biggest director there is right now.
He was dope, man.
He's fucking so talented.
Hey, Jermaine, all those guys.
Oh, for real?
Ian, Jeff. Jeff directed the episode I was on. That's how I met Jeff.
Oh, for real?
Yep.
Shut up.
I want to be a part of those guys because they really serious about the art. They serious about the art.
Man, you have the right brain to be around those people.
Yeah.
Because there's certain people that look at things as like a paycheck or I don't even care.
Yeah.
But then you take your brain and you're like a sponge. You go in and just start drinking in what they're doing it, how they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certain you take all that and apply it to how you're doing it.
Because
your business plan, you said it to me and I'm... It was a little bit of a game changer of the way I heard it is you have a movie right now on Amazon Prime, right?
Yeah, a movie on Amazon Prime. And I'm about to shoot another independent one, but I'm going to try to go through the industry with it. I talk to my agent, but I see these movies in my head, and I just want to – and now it's like, man, partnering with the studios, putting them on money, you know, and partnering with them. Because it's like digital real estate. I'm like – when I flipped a house before, but then when you own a house, even you have tenants in it, gotta fix that AC unit, the roof, the termites, my property taxes. But if you own a movie, it sits up there. You don't got to worry about the lawn getting cut. You don't worry about the tenants messing it up. It sits on this. So it's like digital real estate, which they've been on it back in the day.
Yeah.
But it's like, wow, man, it sits on there. And then if you got a brand, it's, you know, if you invest in it. Now, if I wasn't a brand already, I wouldn't do it because it's risky.
Yeah.
But at least you know you got your in-house customers. They're going to keep your trap alive. And I'm just like, now I'm just into these, creating these content and these movies, using my gift and art and having the business behind it to be like, just in case, I got something to put towards it too. And if y'all don't let me put it towards, I'm fine with that too, but I want a piece of the back end, man.
Yeah, of course you should.
I just want a piece of the back end. I want to make that money forever also.
Yeah, you said it, I forget where you said it, but you said it would be great to make 10 movies, $1 million a piece, and each movie brings in, just let's say it's $3,000 a day, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden you're bringing $30,000 a day, and then I started doing the math, and you go, God damn it, I should have sold drugs when I was younger. I think I'd be so much more successful.
No, but a lot of people didn't make it out of that drug game. I think the only reason I made it out...
A lot of people don't make it out of the comedy game either.
Yeah, they don't make it to a comedy. I tell a lot of people though, man, who try comedy, I'm like, what should I do? I'm like, first, you just ain't good, man. People be trying, so many people trying to do comedy. I'm like, man, listen, everybody's not good.
Yeah, but it's the same thing as podcasting. It's like, I know people that aren't, I've known people who I didn't, who weren't the best comics. I mean, people could say that about me. Honestly, they have, mm-hmm. but I really enjoyed it, and it brought me joy, and I had fun doing it. And I think if you love something, you can do it for yourself, and I think sometimes if you love it enough, you get better at it,
mm-hmm.
and you'll get. And I mean, I think that's me. I think I was a very derivative comic, probably the majority of my career, but I really loved comedy, and I don't think I understood what an authentic voice sounded like. I probably still don't, but. I really enjoyed the riddle of figuring out the joke, the riddle of the, like, it's untangling a necklace is mm-hmm. tangled.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved that in comedy.
Yeah.
I still love it. And then the problem is if there's a lot of problems, but if you don't do it enough, then you forget the rhythms and you forget the things and you start sounding derivative of yourself. You got to do it enough to try to grow. But, and then if you do it too much, I think you can fucking lose your mind.
But Bert, you know, you feel like everybody cousin though, man. It's like your comedy is like that thought you have when you put it out, it's like your thought. It's like we get into Bert mind. So you got this thing about you, man. You can see it's just Bert.
Oh.
You know, everybody just when they see you, like my brother seen you, he like, oh. You know, it's like you just, man, you really the real genius is always secret geniuses. Those who walk like a genius, act like they're trying to look like a genius, they're not the really geniuses. Genius is always hidden under because you really don't want to, but genius really don't want to show nobody everything they got because it's like, it's pure. Your heart good. So you careful about who can get close to your heart.
Oh, I'm getting, you're so funny. You just keep going. I love the way you fucking, I hope this is all in your book because yeah, this is like,
it definitely is.
I definitely feel like this next month is me building walls around myself.
Yeah, you have to because your heart, man, I'm like that. I can see it in your eyes, man. Your heart's so good, you will let everything, we'll say anything, we'll do anything, but the world's not ready for that. The world is the world. So we have to, that's good. You see, that's what I need. I need a wife because my problem is, I say after my Netflix special, man, I might get canceled because I say what's on my mind. But man, I can feel, you know, everybody feels that off you, man. Like I was so excited to come here. I'm like, man, it just to meet real people, you know.
No, man, I'm a fan. I've been a fan for a while. Sure. And I like the one thing I don't have is, and I'm sure I have it. I'm sure I'm fucking full of shit, but like a cynicism about watching people succeed. Mm-hmm. I don't have that. And I watched a bunch of you guys just kind of blow up and at a time where I was a little vulnerable in my life trying to figure out what am I going to do?
Cause what year was it when you actually just catapulted?
I think 2017.
Yeah.
I think 2017 is when the machine story went viral. Uh-huh. But that whole year building up to that, I was doing a lot of bullshit talk and bullshit theories. And like, I was the guy saying things about the internet and not understanding that this is an opportunity. And at a certain point, I just got lost. I was in Philadelphia the first time I realized it, where I was like, I was in Philadelphia in like probably 2016, maybe 2015, when I started looking at the internet as like, if I'm enjoying this, why wouldn't I try to make stuff that people would enjoy?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had a podcast then. I'm not sure. I'm sure I did. But it wasn't on YouTube. I loved Rogan. I watched Rogan religiously. And I was like, if I'm willing to like veer towards that, I should find other things that I'm interested in and veer towards that. I want to say Vine was big at the time.
Mm.
I'm not certain. I can't remember. But that's when I got fired from Travel Channel. I got pulled off this tour. All these things happened to me. And I started focusing on me. But in doing that, I got rid of, I would argue all of my cynicism and started welcoming anything that came in front of me that was good. I started going like, cool. All right, let's go there. Let's do that. Like I remember the big thing, I would find out what gear people shot stuff with. I just took in so much content at that time. And And that's when things changed for me. And then I started believing in myself, because I was like, not everyone bailed on me. I, like, my buddies were still there, but like all the industry bailed on me. And I was like, well, fuck them. If they don't believe in me, I'll just do what I believe is right.
Mm-hmm.
And then listened to no one, did everything on what I thought. And I listened to Tommy. I listened to Joe. I listened to like my close friends mm-hmm. about what they were doing and what they were doing was right. And then the ability to upload things to Facebook, the ability to know how to simply take a video off your computer and put it onto a website, that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, but I learned how to edit. I learned how to do that. I learned how to take control of my own content. And then that's when things started happening. And then I stopped listening to everyone entirely and just started doing everything on my gut and going like, fuck everyone. No one knows. Like, I still listen to, like Rogan said something to me that I think every comic should write in their joke book on the front page, mm-hmm. if not on the fucking cover. And it was, be undeniable.
Mm.
I fucking love that. And he said that to me and I didn't understand it. But mm-hmm. I said to myself, I'm going to figure out what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I remember saying to him, just say something else. I don't know what the fuck that means. And he goes, just be undeniable. Mm-hmm. Be undeniable. When you're undeniable, you'll get everything you want.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, you need a Netflix special. You need to be undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, great, Joe. Great, Joe. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for the advice. And I took, we were at the Comedy Store. I took my joke book and I wrote on the very front page, like the, you know, where it says you put your name and stuff and they lose your joke book. By the way, don't ever fill that out. I've lost a joke book. It's out there. I don't know what's written in it. I'm terrified. That's how I'm getting canceled. Someone reads my thoughts. They're just thoughts, everybody. Just so we're clear, they're just thoughts. I am waiting for that joke book to show up. I know I left it at the Comedy Store. I know there's a comic that hates me that has it, who's going to be like, once they figure out it's mine, they're going to be like, oh, let's ruin this guy. But I wrote Be Undeniable, and then one night I watched a guy I really respect try to shuffle around the lineup so that he didn't have to follow me.
Mm.
And they came up and they're like, hey, is it cool if dot dot goes on after you and or before you? And I went, well, yeah, but I'm going to get the fuck out of here. They're like, yeah, but he has to get out. And I was like, okay. Yeah, that's fine. And so he went on, and I murdered after him. But I didn't even really watch his set.
Mm-hmm.
And then he stuck around to watch me on the second show, so he didn't have to go anywhere.
Mm.
And I did the second show, and I went up early, and he came up after me, and he was like, when did you get so funny? And I was like, huh? And I was like, well, he hasn't seen me in a while. And he was like, and then I was like, oh, that's undeniable. That's undeniable. Like, when that guy, who I really respected, when he says he doesn't want to follow me, and then what sucks, though, is you start getting haters.
Mm-hmm.
You start getting legit haters and people that you were friends with, and I'm sure it creeps up on you. But, like I remember going, like, interesting. And then right after that, I was selling tickets, and then Netflix showed up, and I was like, wait, am I? I am undeniably funny. Like, you can't deny it. Like, I mean, there's a lot of people I'm sure that could be like, I don't find it that funny. My wife being one of them. But but yeah, that was when things started happening for me. And I would take advice from the people I really respected.
Yeah,
like Tommy, I will joke with him all the time. But he was like, he's my best friend. But his advice to me has always been like fucking the gold standard, because he really thinks about the business. You would have had a lot better of a conversation if Tom had been here.
No, man, it's a great conversation, man.
Brother, I appreciate it. I'm a fan. I can't wait to see your Netflix special. Please come back, do BurtCast promote it.
Or
come do my cooking show.
I will, both.
Do both, and we'll promote the fuck out of it. I can't wait to see the movie you do that you shot down in New Zealand.
Oh, yeah, man. It's called, they redid Time Bandits.
Whoa.
With Lisa Kudrow.
Time Bandits?
Yeah.
It's a big fucking deal.
Yeah, it was crazy, man. I was just glad to be there. I played two different characters. I was a guest star, but they put me in two different episodes.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I played Bumpy Johnson, then came back and played African.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. So I went from hey to hey, what's going on today?
Wait, is African just the eyes?
I guess.
Because is American black dude like this, hey, and then Africans like, hey.
Yes. I switched it, and the crazy man, they had everybody from Africa there. So I talking from Africa for real. So I was the only one going around today. And they was like, okay, hey, what's your African accent, man? What's your African accent? I'm like, oh, is this? I said, okay, yeah. So it was crazy.
The captain now.
Yeah, I'm the captain. Yes, today is very happy. I just got all of a sudden, like, oh my God.
Oh, so tell everyone where they can find you. Your book's out right now.
Book out, Help Is On The Way. It's everywhere, man. It's my life story, but at the same time, I got lessons for your blessings. You can find me on social media, Country Wayne with a K. I'm on Facebook, I'm on YouTube, I'm on Instagram, and yeah.
Brother, thank you for doing this. No, I appreciate it.
Thank you, man. For sure.
Hell yeah.
My brother.
My brother.
Bert and Tom, Tom and Bert. One goes topless while the other wears a shirt. Tom tells stories and Bert's the machine. There's not a chance in hell that they'll keep it clean. Here's what we call Two Bears, One Cave. No scripts, a bit of booze, amateur partology. Dirty jokes, raunchy humor, no apologies. Here's what we call Two Bears, One Cave.